razor and take what's there. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talk about the revolution.
This Week in Radical History for the week starting October 13th. Inspiration came from the Slingshot Organizer. More radical info was found at the Daily Bleed website. And some audio segments are being borrowed from the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes. Hey!
This Week in Radical History for October 13th, 1855. In Grenada, William Walker takes a private army into Grenada to overthrow the government on this date. Walker runs around a lot of South America taking over governments here and there while passing laws to bring back slavery into fashion. Not surprisingly, he is supported by volunteers and supplies from the Southern Confederacy states. Walker is even recognized as president of Nicaragua by the U.S. president. He eventually would be captured and killed by a firing squad. Well deserved. Also on October 13, 1902, Teddy Roosevelt threatens to work the coal mines with federal troops if the strike does not end. Roosevelt was a mouthpiece for powerful industrialists in this country. He was quoted as saying, "The worst foe of the poor man is labor leaders, who tries to teach him that he is a victim of conspiracy and injustice." Economic philosophy of Teddy Roosevelt. Also on October 13, 1909, educator, rationalist, and founder of the public modern school system, Francesco Furer, is killed by Spanish Catholic monarchs. He was opposed to the influence of state religion and dogmas. He hated the Catholic Church monopolizing education in Spain, and they hated Führer. An anarchist militant and free thinker, he was blamed for the upheavals during the tragic week in July in Barcelona. After his execution, capitals throughout Europe, demonstrations are held protesting the execution of Führer. Violent confrontations between the protesters and the police occur in Paris, where over 500,000 people turned out. In Argentina, where 20,000 workers will have a general strike, which will last until October 17th. On the second anniversary, 2 years later, protesters continue in the anniversary of Führer's death. A professor at Columbia University in New York is fired for daring to share a platform with Emma Goldman as more Führer modern schools are opened up around the world. 5 years later, in 1914, multiple bombs are planted at churches throughout New York, and anti-anarchist sentiments increase, which will lead to things like the Palmer Raids. Also born on this date in 1925, Lenny Bruce, stand-up comic, social rebel, hounded to death by cops throughout his career. Imprisoned on obscenity charges, as the shows are banned throughout England and Australia as well. Nightclub owners, fearing police harassment, begin refusing to book him, and his career collapses. Lastly, it's been recently revealed that on this date in 1970, the CIA paid Chilean military $20,000 to assassinate the duly elected president of Chile, Allende. This Week in Radical History for October 14th, 1864, the first African-American daily newspaper, the New Orleans Tribune, begins publishing in both French and English. Also on October 14, 1912, Teddy Roosevelt, campaigning in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, is shot at close range by anarchist William Schreck. Also on this date in 1985, Attorney General Ed Meese would be quoted as saying, "If a person is innocent of a crime, then he is not a suspect." So much for innocent until proven guilty. Also on October 14, 1994, commie folk singer Pete Seeger receives the 1994 National Medal of the Arts from President Clinton.
Fortunate to have back on our show a man who was on the first show of the season. He's a major influence on American music, and he's written such songs as "Where Have All the Flowers Gone?", "Turn, Turn, Turn," and with Lee Hayes of the Weavers, the song "If I Had a Hammer." And also such songs as "Michael Row the Boat Ashore," "On Top of Old Smoky," "Goodnight Irene," "Kisses Sweeter Than Wine," and "Weem Away" are just a few of the songs that he has introduced and kept alive through his singing. We're very proud to have this man on our show, not only because he's a great man, a fine man, and a great performer, but also because he performs rarely on television. In fact, he's only made one major television appearance in the last 17 years. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy to present on our show for the second time, Mr. Pete Seeger.
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that Washington never told a lie. I learned that soldiers seldom die. I learned that everybody's free. That's what the teacher said to me. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends. I learned that murderers die for the crimes, even if we make a mistake sometime. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that war is not so bad. I learned about the great ones we have had. We fought in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
What was not mentioned in the intro that you just heard is that the reason why Pete was not on the TV for 17 years was because he was blacklisted during a McCarthy hearing, witch hunts. And though the Supreme Court would rule in Seeger's favor years later, that he has the right not to discuss his political affiliations, he, like so many others, were still blacklisted for many, many years. When his mother's brothers bravely brought him back onto the airways, his song that he played on that show, The Big Muddy, was pulled from the show airways. The Smothers Brothers protested and he got him back on the show, and that was the intro you just heard. However, their show would also be taken off the air for insisting that Seeger be allowed back on the show to sing the song The Big Muddy. Here's that controversial song by Pete Seeger.
It was back in 1942, I was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river, that's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base? Sergeant, go on, I forded this river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging, we'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist-deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim. Sergeant, don't be a nervous Nelly, the captain said to him. All we need is a little determination, men, follow me, I'll lead on. We were neck deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. All at once the moon clouded over, we heard a gurgling cry. A few seconds later, the captain's helmet was all that floated by. The sergeant said, turn around, men, I'm in charge from now on. And we just made it out of the big muddy with the captain dead and gone. We stripped and dived and found his body stuck in the old quicksand. I guess he didn't know that the water was deeper than the place he'd once before been. Another stream had joined the big muddy about a half mile from where he'd gone. We were lucky to escape from the big muddy when the big fool set to push on. Well, I'm not going to point any moral, I'll leave that for yourself. Maybe you're still walking, you're still talking, you'd like to keep your health. But every time I read the paper, them old feelings come on. We're waist-deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist-deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist-deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist-deep, neck deep, soon even a tall man will be over his head. We're waist-deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on.
This week in Radical History for October 15th, 1892, The 1.8 million acres of the Crow Indian Reservation in Montana is opened by white settlers, forced proclamation issued by President Harrison. Also on this date in 1997, El Salvador, President Romero is deposed by the military coup. In February of 1981, the U.S. admits having sent 18 CIA advisors to help the military junta. Then, as in today, here's a brief report on U.S. intervention in the up-and-coming El Salvador elections, this segment from Latin Radical Radio.
You tell us a little bit about what the Minister for Foreign Affairs from El Salvador said last week in the United States.
Hi, Warwick. Very interestingly, after the recent discussions that the United States Solidarity Groups had in El Salvador with the ambassador from the United States to El Salvador, where the United States admitted its previous interference in internal affairs of El Salvador. This time around, the United States would not be looking at direct interference, or even indirect, if you like, interference that could be attributable to the United States in the coming Salvadoran elections. So when you then have the foreign minister of the nation, Marisol Argueta, going before the American Enterprise Institute in Washington, D.C., specifically asking for United States intervention. Yeah. I guess that's put that ambassador in an interesting situation now with these comments by Minister Argueta, not just comments but appeal for United States intervention. I mean, she specifically put to the United States, to the Conservative American Enterprise Institute in Washington, that the proposition that losing in El Salvador would be not just devastating for the security and national interests of the oligarchy within El Salvador, but also for the United States. A big call that she's put out there, you know, from one fascist right-wing government to the supporting interests in neighbouring imperialist United States.
It's deja vu all over again. More illegal, more moral U.S. involvement in South America, for on this date in 1984, the Associated Press reports the existence of a CIA-prepared terrorism manual advising right-wing Nicaraguan rebels how to blackmail unwilling civilians into supporting their cause, how to arrange deaths of fellow rebels to create martyrs, and how to kidnap and kill, or as the manual puts it, neutralize government officials. This manual was first revealed by the Baltimore Sun in January, but the U.S. media, including the Washington Post and New York Times, buried it for years.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, October 16th in 1859, white American abolitionist John Brown led an attack on Harper's Ferry, a U.S. arsenal in Virginia. With a group of about 20 men, five of whom were black, John Brown attacked and captured the arsenal with the intention of distributing the weapons and inspiring a slave revolt throughout the South. Although they managed to get into the arsenal, the raid was short-lived because Southern citizens and militia soon cornered Brown and his followers. When the U.S. Marines arrived, they stormed the arsenal, killing many of the rebels. The rest of them were captured and eventually hanged, including John Brown. John Brown was the first white abolitionist in America to engage in an insurrection against the institution of slavery. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Also on October 16th, 1893, Emma Goldman is sentenced to Blackwell's Island Penitentiary for 1 year, her crime given a speech. In 1919, the Deportation Act to rid U.S. of anarchist aliens, thousands including Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman jailed and sent packing to Russia. Quoting Emma, "And you, are you so forgetful of your past? Is there no echoes in your soul of your poet's songs, your dreamer's dreams, your rebel's calls?" Emma Goldman. Lastly, for October 16th in 1998, Abraham Lincoln Brigade is honored. More than 60 years after they took up arms against the fascists of Spain, of which Hemingway romanticized them and the FBI files blacklisted them, members of the anarchist all-volunteer Lincoln Brigade had finally been given an official monument in this country, as U.S. nor England at the time would raise a finger to help fight the fascists. This week in Radical History for October 17th, I only have one item. In 1920, John Reed, American radical journalist, dies in Moscow at age 32, chronicled the Mexican and Soviet revolutions, wrote the book 10 Days That Would Shock the World. Reed is the only American buried in Red Square. For a good movie about his life and his run-ins with the character in the movie Emma Goldman, see the 1981 movie Reds, starring Warren Beatty. That is the movie Reds.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, October 18th in 1968, black American track medalists Tommy Smith and John Carlos were suspended from the U.S. Olympic team for publicly displaying the black power fist at the Mexico City Olympic Games 2 days earlier. As the American flag rose and the Star Spangled Banner played, both Smith and Carlos had bowed their heads and raised their fists to represent black pride and unity. The gesture had been inspired by a recent movement encouraging black athletes to boycott the Olympics in protest of the oppression that black people still faced in America, despite the efforts of the civil rights movement. The display of resistance enraged many white Americans who stated that Olympic Games were supposed to be apolitical. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away. On this day, October 19th in 1849, Elizabeth Blackwell graduated from Geneva Medical College in New York, becoming the first woman in the United States to receive a medical degree. Elizabeth was originally born in England to a family that encouraged both their daughters and their sons to pursue a formal education. Upon moving to America, she joined the abolitionist cause as well as becoming an active women's rights advocate. After completing graduate studies in a London hospital, Elizabeth returned to the U.S., but finding herself barred from practicing in American hospitals, she established a medical clinic in New York for women and children. 10 years later, she founded a women's medical college there to train women physicians. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all wet to the university, where they all were put in boxes, little boxes all the same. And there's doctors and there's lawyers and business executives, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martini dry, and all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to the university, where they all got put in boxes, and they all came out the same. And the boys go into business, and marry and raise a family in boxes, little boxes, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.
You've been listening to more of Pete Seeger, and this has been This Week in Radical History, produced out of the Glee Glee Studios. Special thanks to the Radio Roots crew at WBAI, whose audio I borrowed. Thanks to the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website for a whole lot of radical info I use in the show, and the Slingshot organizer for the inspiration for this piece. A reminder what anarchist and feminist Emma Goldman once said: if voting never really changed anything, they would have made it illegal. So until next week's This Week in Radical History, I am forever yours in the struggle, Mike Cannon.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son. He'll be with you fellow workers until this battle's won. Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Sing it!
Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, workers, can you stand it? Tell me how you can. Will
Will you be a lousy scab or will you be a man? Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Tell me which side are you on? Which side are you on? Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell. Tell me which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?